media is in a tizzy over the alt-right's fake news, despite the fact that when the mainstream media normally traffics, what they traffic in is a false product. First, all news stories are filtered free of most conservative reinforcing content. Then the stories are dumbed down. A default socialism is added. Ta-da! Finished product. In the meantime, an entire elite society fighting for socialism with science tries to dominate America. Very scary. Don't forget, the New York Times said they had a moral duty to use the world's greatest newspaper to advocate against Trump, but they are also unbiased. Yet in a time when we desperately need unfiltered facts to fight the war on terror and rebuild our troubled land, the mainstream media doubled down on fake content to defeat Trump. Then when their blessed darling, the demon-infested Hillary Rodham Clinton, lost, all hell broke free. And the mainstream media came looking for who was falsifying the news that killed their baby. Sickening, isn't it? There must be a better way. Point of view reporting, revolutionized by new journalism advocates like Tom Wolf, means the writer or reporter allows his biases to be known. Then the listeners and viewers can calculate the impact of this. Because there is no news from nowhere, and in these troubled times, we need all the sources of information we can get. Yet, as Time magazine just announced, Donald Trump is Person of the Year, believe it or not. Why? Because he shatters expectations every day and turns D.C. on its head at the flick of a wrist. Now, let's see if Donald can live up to this new honor. Good morning. It is 6:08, Kelly O'Connell. And just as I was putting my show together, I saw that Time magazine had honored the Donald with Man of the Year. So can't argue with that, I guess. Now, got a lot of stuff to go over today. A lot of stuff, a lot of great stories. And, of course, I do want to get to your headlines for you. But here is this story that Time has put out. And they've got a little, actually, website where they have a clip about this. Person of the Year, Donald Trump.
Every year we choose the Person of the Year, who is the individual who has had the most influence on events, for better or worse. It's hard to argue that anyone had more influence than Donald Trump over the events of this year.
You know, I didn't get Beyonce and Jay-Z and Bruce Springsteen to get crowds. I had just me and ideas that people wanted to hear.
But there's a profound argument about whether his influence was for the better or for the worse. And that really is the challenge that faces him. The country came through this election season more divided, conspicuously, publicly, than at any time through any election cycle that most of us can remember.
We're going to have a lot of jobs brought back. I think we're going to have a lot fewer companies leaving our country. I believe we will be successful with defeating ISIS, or bringing them down to a level where it's almost the same thing. And I hope I'm judged from the time of the election as opposed to from January 20th, because the stock market has had a tremendous bounce and people are seeing very good things for business in this country.
One of the things that was remarkable in going to see him, to interview him, is to be in that penthouse, which is the most ostentatious imaginable marble and mirrors and gold, and see him in the suit and the diamond cufflinks. There's a kind of dissonance that we pressed him about, of how is it that the billionaire is the tribune of the working man. He said he thought that it had to do with that he wasn't a phony, that there have certainly been wealthy politicians before who in some cases would bend over backwards to make themselves appear like the common man, or do anything that they could, eating the corn dog at the Iowa State Fair and wearing a flannel shirt in New Hampshire. I think he had a very strong instinct that his wealth and the flamboyant display of his wealth was not a liability, that it was actually an asset. Donald Trump is very comfortable sitting down and answering questions, although he very frequently does not remotely answer the question that you ask. In one sense, it feels very undisciplined. In another sense, maybe it's very disciplined in that he knows what he will and will not talk about and is unabashed in completely changing the subject.
Do you feel changed by your election? And how do you think, you know, if I play this tape back in 4 or 8 years, the office will have changed you?
Well, it's a very humbling experience, I can tell you, as somebody that loves this country. It's a very large country, but it's also a even more powerful country than the numbers, because if you look at China and India, and you have others with more people, but when you look at what we do in this country, it's the most incredible place on earth.
A lot of people think that Person of the Year, just because the nature of the name, is an honor. And certainly there have been years where we have recognized people whose influence has been altogether unassailably worthy. Normally that's not the case. I know there are a lot of people who disagree with so much of what Donald Trump said and are very apprehensive about what his presidency means for them and for the country. I think I would challenge them to suggest that someone else this year had more influence and in a way a greater surprise than what he did in 2016.
Person of the Year, Donald Trump. Well, you can't beat that kind of free publicity. So what has Donald done recently? He's had this interaction with Boeing that was kind of eye-opening. So let's take a little break here. 613-523-1450, and we'll come back and find out what Trump and Boeing talked about. All right, so got some news here for you from, besides Trump as Man of the Year, which don't forget that Hitler was at one point Man of the Year. Now, I don't know what year that was. I really don't care, but it's for newsmakers. And no, I'm not in agreement with Frankie. I don't agree that Trump is like Hitler. Shame on you, Frankie. Shame on you. But anyway, so, you know, time doesn't necessarily mean it as a compliment. I've got something else I'm going to talk about today that I think you'll find very illuminating, very interesting. But let's get into this, and I'll get you some headlines in a minute, but let's get into this Donald Trump explaining objections to Boeing's $4 billion contract for 2 airplanes. Do you think... I mean, this question goes without saying. Do you think Obama would have objected to a $4 billion contract for two Air Force? I mean, you know, whatever you like about Obama, he was absolutely fearless in spending money. He seemed to luxuriate, to love spending money, other people's money. And, you know, Obama was kind of a free rider. He was just there for whatever was going down and tried to influence things, I would say, in a negative direction, bring down the economy, bring down America's reputation and everything. But he's not an original thinker. And I think Donald is, or at least Donald is an iconoclast. He's not afraid to go after and do things in a different way. It's kind of refreshing. And then you see all of the fake stuff that was in the presidency before that we just accepted. Check it out. Here we go. Donald's going after Boeing.
With Mayor Bowser from Washington, D.C. today.
Well, we're going to talk about a lot of things to a lot of people. We have a lot of people coming up. Great group of people. Doing very well. Thank you all very much.
Mr. Trump, you tweeted this morning about canceling the contract for the new Air Force One. Is that something you're serious about trying to do?
Well, the plane is totally out of control. It's going to be over $4 billion. It's for Air Force One program. And I think it's ridiculous. I think Boeing is doing a little bit of a number. We want Boeing to make a lot of money, but not that much money. Okay, thank you.
You know what
hey,
I love?
NBC News fans, thanks for.
You know what I love about this guy is that he loves to talk. He's very comfortable on camera, and he loves to talk. And it's so refreshing to see this. It's so entertaining to see this cabinet assembled, and he's in his restaurant and bringing people in and eating frog legs and talking to the abominable Mitt Romney. But here's a little bit more on the on the Boeing agreement.
You just heard Trump says Boeing is, in his words, doing a little bit of a number on the airplane contract. Correspondent Doug McElway looks into the deal and whether or not Trump can really stop it.
To replace the aging Air Force One, the last two-series Boeing 747 in operation in the U.S., the Air Force signed a single-bid contract with Boeing earlier this year for three new 747-8 series to be ready by the year 2024, later reduced to just two planes. But the president-elect threw the agreement into doubt this morning when he fired another warning shot across the bow of an American company, threatening to cancel the contract because of what Trump alleged were cost overruns.
It's going to be over $4 billion for Air Force One program, and I think it's ridiculous.
At today's opening bell, Boeing stock dove 1.6% before climbing back. Boeing responded after Trump's comment that it's in the early stages of designing the new planes and has only spent $170 million thus far. The Air Force told Fox News it's budgeted $2.7 billion in 2017, but, quote, expect this number to change as the program matures. Critics of Pentagon procurement noted the new Marine One helicopter fleet, first announced in the Obama administration's infancy, was also grossly over budget.
Your helicopter is now going to cost as much as Air Force One.
The helicopter I have now seems perfectly adequate to me. Of course, I've never had a helicopter before.
The Obama administration canceled the program to replace the fleet after the projected cost more than doubled. One expert suggests there's a common thread in cost overruns.
What I believe is driving Air Force One, the 747, is requirements that are far too excessive. And that's where they have to get a handle on it.
Observers say Trump's remarks were clearly designed to send a signal to the Pentagon about its bloated procurement process.
If the president-elect's intent is to say we need to reform how the Pentagon does business, then he's absolutely right.
But all right, so that's kind of interesting anyway. Everything this guy does is interesting. Now, we've got some records out there. We've got some news on the weather front. Chicago breaks 1940 snowfall record. Temperatures plunge across the United States, negative 35 degrees in some places. And so it's going to get a lot colder. Here's some headlines for you. LA subway is militarized, big guns, bag searches for the supposed attack. Barry Diller, who just said he hated Donald and Donald was a fraud, he's another New York billionaire. He's suddenly said that he's finds him to be very interesting. And I don't know if you want to hear that, but scientific study, Earth's day is getting longer and slower. Republican plans to cut federal workforce. Judge rules woman can marry stepdaughter. I'm going to bring this up a little bit later. That is sad, isn't it? The kind of changes that we're making, and there is nothing is wrong anymore. Very bizarre. SoftBank going to invest $50 billion in, which I think is an Asian bank, going to invest $50 billion. Older people, happiest in Hawaii. That probably means they have money, doesn't it? Tebow going to be playing for the Mets in the spring. That's a good thing for the Mets. Here is, see anything else you might find notable. Well, I don't really see anything else, so let's turn to, now that's Argentina, where the woman's going to marry her own stepdaughter. Here is, all right, well, let me just get into a few stories here. Let me play for you some of the temperature stuff. Let's take a break. We'll take a break right here and come back, and I'll have some weather lined up for you. Kelly O'Connell, 625 AM Las Cruces, AM 1455, 23-1450. And I don't know where the text machine is, but I'll bring it in tomorrow. Be right back. All right, still queuing up these stories on the cold here for you. Now, looking for stories for you in Google News. And Christian McCaffrey going into the NFL, maybe the top running back in the United States, and just happens to be Anglo. He happens to be a cracker. Well, we'll see how he does in the NFL. It takes a lot more to make it there, obviously. All right. There's something I wanted to get into. I might get into it here pretty soon. It had to do with a story that I saw on the Weather Channel earlier today and got me thinking about what is going on in the society and the media and everything. And this battle over fake news is kind of, to me, it's kind of surprising, because to say that you're fighting against fake news means that you're opposed to fake news. And from what I can tell, the mainstream media is constantly falsifying information to get people to believe what they believe, which is leftism. So I want to dig into that a little bit. But the Argentine judge rules woman can marry her own stepdaughter. And an Argentinian judge created a precedent and an uproar when he overrode the country's civil code and authorized a woman to marry her own stepdaughter. And the unusual love story began, and this is from Fox News, when a woman, the two women's names being withheld by the court system, married a much older man who had a daughter from a previous marriage who was nearly the same age as her after her husband's death in 2010. Just 4 months after their wedding, the stepmom got closer with the daughter, and then they started a romantic relationship. Of course, they wanted to formalize this. So they decided to get married, and they got married. So here we have a phone call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show.
Hey, Kelly, it's Tom.
Hey, what's up?
I have a quick question. Did you hear about the woman who stole all the identity, like social security numbers and stuff like that down in the county, was it?
Yeah.
And she was, she's given probation and charges were dismissed.
I thought that was absolutely side splitting.
Amazing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, another giant victory for the DA's office, I guess.
Yeah. Amazing. Okay, Kelly. Bye bye.
Thanks. Well, yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe the DA thought they were going to lose the case. Maybe they were on pins and needles. But I don't know. I've never seen anything like this DA's office. But call in with your own stories, 523-1450. But they've lost a number of notable cases, and they keep pleading the stuff out. And then they take these penny-ante cases. You know, they do, they will take cases to trial that don't have any kind of a thorough police investigation, in which the claim by the victim is basically of a he said, she said nature, without any, you know, real backing evidence or such. And they'll lose a case like that, or they'll get a hung jury and then they'll take it back to court again. I mean, it seems like a total misuse of the budget. But anyway, all right, so here is, I've got some weather stories here for you. Weather.com. Lake effect snow in the Great Lakes.
The lake effect snow machine is cranking up over the next couple of days. Places like Chicago, yep, you're going to get a little bit more snow. That was the snow you received over the weekend, so really starting to feel a lot like the winter season. Now, here's what we're looking at. We still have these warmer water temperatures, and now it's clashing with the Arctic air coming in from the north. So this is going to keep lake effect snow alive right into the weekend. And snow totals not too shabby as we head in through Sunday. So places like Traverse City, you could get up to a foot. Look on the eastern side of the Great Lakes as well. Places like Olean, up to 18 inches.
And here is from Winter Snow Watches up in Seattle and Portland.
You know, it's one thing to see the word blizzard on a weather map, or, you know, hear that you have a blizzard in the forecast. But when you see what an actual blizzard is, it's incredibly dangerous to be outside in. It's so easy to get stranded. People kind of like run out of gas in some situations, and, you know, you can freeze to death out and stuff like this. And by the way, this is the blizzard that's pretty much going on right now. Parts of the Dakotas, northwestern Minnesota, especially, whiteout conditions in places. And that's the scary thing about a blizzard, is it really doesn't have to do per se with how much snow is falling out of the sky. yes, you can have blizzards where you got a lot of snow falling out of the sky and the wind blows it around. But sometimes you can just have a lot of snow on the ground and the wind is so strong that it blows it around and you end up with whiteout conditions. It's the visibility that matters in a blizzard. All these little lines you see here, these are lines of constant pressure. When you see them close together, that means that it's really windy. And that's why you've got the blizzard conditions going on right now. And yes, there is some snow falling out of the sky too. The worst of it is over in the Dakotas, but we've still got a decent amount to go. Up in northwestern parts of Minnesota, I'd say a good solid 5 to 8 inches more in those spots. Could see 1 to 3 inches in parts of North Dakota as well.
All right. Now, here's on the coldest weather time of the year.
It's December, and we're now entering the coldest 3 months of the year, December to February. So when can you expect the coldest temperatures to pop up in your neck of the woods? Well, here's the output from NOAA. Now, this is historically speaking when places see their coldest temperatures of the season. And if you notice, it moves west to east. So the coldest air sets up in the Pacific Northwest, parts of California, Arizona, and the Rockies generally in December. Now, for the Midwest, the East, the Northeast, we typically see those coldest days between January and February.
And it looks for us like we've got our coldest in January and February, too. There's a little spot there. But in any event, I'm going to continue to look for a nice clip, a recent clip on this cold spell that's coming in. But I got some local weather for you. 6:37 a.m. Las Cruces AM 1450. 523 1450. Be right back. Kelly on KOBE. All right, and so we've got from the Daily Mail, get ready for the chill. Forecasters predict temperatures could fall 35 degrees below average as polar plunge sweeps across the country. And forecasters say temperatures will take a massive plunge over the next few days. Arctic winds sweeping across the country in a massive jet stream this week. Temperatures in some parts of the U.S. will be as much as 35 below average. Snows forecast in high plains and Mississippi Valley northeast. Even Texas will be chilly, with Dallas expected to have its coldest day since 2015. And so to what extent we're going to be affected, I'm not really sure. Looking for a weather map here, and it doesn't look well. I mean, if Dallas is going to be affected, then, well, we're certainly going to be affected by at least for a little while, is too true. And anyway, so let me get some of this stuff lined up for the next hour so I can have time to review it over the break. But I have one. All right, hold on. One right here.
Name and weather. Right now, we're taking a look at the dramatic changes happening courtesy of the gigantic dig and dip in the jet stream that's opening up the door for winter to really arrive throughout a good chunk of the west and midwest portion of the country. We're going to have chilly conditions throughout the northeast, and it's even going to chill out more so in the deep south as well. This is all part of an Arctic blast that's coming from the north. Now, first and foremost, as we kind of begin to break this down, we're looking for, we're already seeing that breakdown is happening with that cold air that's already causing a bit of a wintry mix throughout the northwest with plenty of cold air. Towards the deep south for this morning, we're going to start seeing the cold air begin to even sink its way further to the south, affecting the deep south. Now, it's going to stop just shy, let's say, in the mid-south area, still leaving it clear in Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, and down towards Texas and Louisiana. But that's going to begin to change for us because by the time we get into Thursday morning, here comes that Arctic air. As far south, it reaches all the way down to the Gulf of Mexico. Then it sinks all the way down and will begin to just fall just shy in the northern borders of Florida. Now, for Thursday night, we're looking for temperatures to drop to near freezing in areas where not really accustomed to having temperatures drop to near freezing. And then by Friday morning, that cold air reaches all the way down and even affects the folks in Florida in a dramatic way. So what are we talking about? We're talking about the coldest air of the season, of the entire season, beginning to work its way across, not only to the south, that was just the southern half of this front we showed you. We also have that bubble of air that's working its way to the east. It'll encompass the Great Lakes region by Wednesday. And then as we go into Thursday, it begins to slide across the Ohio Valley region and begins to align itself right along the east coast. And then as we go into Friday, when it affects Florida, it will actually capture, so to speak, like a big cold army. It'll capture the East Coast as well with that dramatic drop in the temps, and it's going to be a big drop below norm.
All right, so that's that. All right, so I came up with a story that I thought was might be of note to you. It is a story about the drop in, I'm going to get into the fake news thing in the next hour, but there's a story out there.
Have you seen Prius?
Pardon me. There's a story out there on Japan, and basically people, they say, have stopped dating in Japan to a large extent. There are a lot of people that are virgins, that are older virgins. And it was kind of interesting. So I did some research on it and came up with a number of stories on, let's see here. Well, just a number of stories on Japan, but also falling birth rates in, falling birth rates in the West. And so, there's a basically a crisis in Japan, and I'm just wondering, you know, it's basically hit America too. And the problem with Japan is that they're xenophobic, or they're opposed to foreigners in a lot of ways, and so they don't bring in a bunch of foreign people like we do. We're constantly bringing in foreigners, and that is covering up our lack of we're not reproducing now. Now, part of it is because of there's a couple things at work here. Part of it is propaganda, and I got into this interesting conversation last night with this guy that I met. I went to a restaurant last night and played the piano for a while. And when I got done, I played for I don't know an hour or whatever. I took a break, and there was a guy at the bar, and I started talking to him and his wife, and so. His wife was talking about that she was a therapist and that she liked political correctness. And so the guy started talking about it. She liked it. I couldn't really gather exactly why she liked it. It seemed like she liked it because it made people not force people to be nice to one another. I think was her theory. the guy started talking about it, and he goes, well, what do you think of political correctness? I said, well, it's propaganda. And so he says, well, I mean, you know, it's a good thing. And I said, well, I mean, you know, he says it's true, isn't it? And I said, well, I really don't look at it that way. I look at it as a way to manipulate people into acting a certain way. And I think most of the ideas in political correctness are fundamentally false, but that's not the issue. The issue is that it is meant to manipulate people into following this new social code. So I'll get into that later, but I thought it was kind of interesting. And so getting back to reproduction, we have been propagandized in this culture that the earth is overcrowded, number one. Number two, we're killing the earth. Number three, we have to keep birth rates down. So this is a tenet of far leftism, and I can prove that by pointing out that one of the most far left countries in history, communist China, instituted, everybody knows this, a one-child policy. So if that policy was followed enough generations, then the population would be cut in half, right, at best. Because if all you can have at most is one child, then for every two people that come together, one is produced. So, and there's all kinds of problems in China from this policy. But leftism has communicated to people, and then feminism has also done another angle on this. Women are not here to reproduce and have families. They're here to have careers and to fulfill themselves. And if part of that is having a family and reproducing, then that's, you know, that's their business. But that we should be careful to, and here is a tenet of far, far leftism. The perfect population for the earth is 500,000. How they arrived at that number, I don't know, but it would mean cutting the population down now is like 6 billion, 7 billion. That would be 1/14, I guess, of the size. Anyway, I've got a little clip here for you. Japan is dying. All work, no sex means no future. So it is, I was going to tell you there's two things. Number one is the propagandizing against children and families and such, especially large families, are considered to be immoral today because they use up more resources than they should. The second one, though, is that in advanced societies, by definition, don't reproduce as fast. So anyway, here's a little clip on this.
Japan is shrinking, literally. Inside the Pacific Island nation, more people are dying than being born. I'm scared for the future of my children and my country. A demographic time bomb has already exploded, threatening to cripple the world's third largest economy.
The problem is that young women are not having enough children to keep our country going.
Japan's population has shrunk by a record 1 million since 2008. At the same time, the Japanese are living longer. Japan is home to the fastest aging society in the entire world. There are approximately 33 million people over the age of 65. That's roughly 25% of the country. And experts warn that number could reach as high as 40%.
We're dealing with an unprecedented situation. No other country in the world is facing such a crisis.
Ruichi Kaneko is head statistician at Japan's National Institute of Population. He says if the situation doesn't change, and change dramatically, Japan's population will drop from 127 million today to 107 million in 2040, 87 million by 2060, and a mere 46 million by 2100.
And the rate of aging in Japan will only climb. We're projecting that by 2060, 40% of the population will be 65 years or older.
The government is in a panic. 10 years ago, it created an agency to encourage couples to have more children.
Having a family is a beautiful thing. I'm trying to encourage others to see it as a blessing and not a curse.
But a study this year shows the Japanese just aren't interested in sex or marriage. A record 50% of married couples said they've stopped having sex. Among the main reasons, 21% of men said they were too tired after work. 23% of women said sex was bothersome.
This is why Japan is known in the world as the country with very few children.
Kaneko also discovered that millions of Japanese aren't even dating. A survey he did in 2011 found 61% of unmarried men and 49% of women in their 20s and 30s were not in any kind of romantic relationship.
Okay, and if they are in a relationship, they're postponing marriage to much later in life or simply choosing to remain unmarried.
A sentiment shared with CBN News by several young folks on the streets of Tokyo.
There are more women working today than ever before, and that's good, since it will help with Japan's shrinking labor force. But this also means that women are delaying or choosing not to get married.
Life in the city is very expensive. Trying to start a family or having children will make it even more challenging.
The strain of falling birth rates, a shrinking labor force, and longer lifespans is evident at this Christian nursing home west of Tokyo.
All right, so that's just a little taste of what's going on in Japan. Now, if your population is falling, your country is failing. Your tax revenues are down. Your economy is shrinking. If your people are not dating and getting married, one of the primary functions of human life have been set aside, and your culture has lost its meaning. It's lost its way. We've got a phone call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connor Show. Who's this?
This is Michael.
Michael, good morning to you. How you doing?
Ohayo gozaimasu. I lived in Japan for a little over 3 years in a little Japanese village, and I know exactly why all this is happening, and it's not tied to everything they're talking about.
Fill us in.
They really spend a lot of their time in school, the regular school and then the juku afterwards, and they're so test-centric and they're so tied up in duty and honor that they end up spending, those kids end up spending, 11 hours a day on school, and man, they're great scholars. But when they get out of college, all they've thought about is the next test. It's a warning about what we're doing here in New Mexico.
Which is
we only concentrate on the test. You know, every moment in the schools for many of the teachers is spent just looking at the test, not anything else, instead of being curious and being fun-loving. And, of course, you can take that too far, but, the problem we really have is the fact that they are taking all the fun out of learning something in education, which when I lived in Japan, they were doing there.
Well, there's got to be more to it than test taking. I mean, it seems like Japan has lost its way. I mean, it's, the way a society continues is by creating more members and educating them and bringing them up in a family. It seems like they're not doing that.
Well, and again, I lived in a little Japanese village called Fusunaka, and everything was pointed toward your career and, whether you were going to get into an A college or a B college. And it wasn't about the family, the nuclear family. The man would normally work till, 10 at night, 11 at night. Kids rarely saw him. You do that for a couple generations, and you have what you see there.
Well, we're running out of time. I got a couple more ads, but you have a summary?
No, that's it. Sayonara. Yes, aminasai.
Thank you, Michael. Have a good day. All right. So whether you've lived there or not, it's obvious to see that there is something that is desperately wrong in Japan. And I'm bringing it up today to ask if it's possible that we could follow in the same way. Now, we have a lot more people coming in here, so it's not going to be exactly, but But I think there is, they've lost something. Anyway, we'll take a break and come right back.
Why do you do this thing to me?
All right, so we just have a moment left, but here's an article, academic article, published in 2009, NCBI website. Declining birth rate in developed countries, a radical policy rethink is required. And so what you find in developed countries is that the birth rate falls. That's why you don't have to do radical things like China does to hold down population. All you need to do is become first world. Once you do that, for whatever reason, and there are obviously reasons, then the population growth plummets. You don't have to kill babies to achieve that. But having said that, there's something terribly wrong with the West view of the family. Why have a job? Why bust your butt on tests and higher achievement in places like Japan if you don't have anybody to enjoy it with? Yeah, you know, one of the basic purposes and most fun aspects of life is dating and romance and everything. You throw that out the window. What does it mean to be a human being? What are you, just a cog in a machine, a robot? We'll take a break on the hour. 6:59, so great to spend some time with you this morning. I'm going to come back and talk about fake news and the weird ideas that are being pumped out there right now and how to fight back. We'll be back in just a minute.
Woman, you must be crazy. Guess I'll never understand. You know I made love to another woman, 'cause I caught you making love to another man.
All right, so 7:06, last hour on this seventh day of December. Woo, it's getting closer to Christmas. Wonder what percentage of people don't put up lights or a tree or anything these days. How many people have dropped out of Christmas? But we talked last hour about Trump being named Man of the Year and also him standing up to Boeing, which is what they say he's done. And then we finished her. Well, we talked about a cold front that is coming in, but we finished her up with the staggering loss of intimacy and reproduction in Japan. Now, what is the purpose of being alive? It certainly must be more than just taking tests and getting a higher paying job if you live by yourself. And one of the researchers in Japan said the problem was what he called herbivore men. So I would take that to mean men that are not aggressive. All right, here's a related story. CNN says U.S. fertility rate falls to lowest on record, August 11th, 2016, so just a few months ago, and the lowest rate since record keeping has been done for a century. So the rate is... Fertility rate in the U.S. is 59.8 births per 1,000 women. And it was previously 60. At its height, the birth rate was 122.9 births per 1,000 women. So our fertility rate has dropped in half. So what does it mean? I think one of the things that it means is it puts teeth into this idea that you've got to have immigration. If there was a lot, I mean, if you had got rid of abortion, which has gotten removed, say, 60 million people that would have been born into the society, and let's say as a result of that, 150 million more people would be here because those people would reproduce as well. I did an article on this. This is why I had kind of developed my thinking on this. Then you wouldn't have a demand for the kind of labor, you know, you'd have a lot more young people out there, and you'd also have people to work more jobs. And so I know that the one of the problems here is unemployment, but it is a bunch of fallacies that have been put out there, that the earth is overcrowded, has never been proved, was put out by a guy by the name of Malthus, Reverend Malthus, centuries ago. And as the centuries have gone by, we haven't produced, we haven't become more starving. We've become better at producing food, because people like this, Malthus, don't calculate in the advances of the future. Here's another one. You want to solve global warming. You want to kill babies in the womb. You want to stop overproduction of, you know. And the fact of the matter is, if you got all the countries in the world up to a first world level through education, through capitalism, through improvement of the law and rights and everything, then the reproduction rate would plummet, because that's what happens, you know. So we've got all these fallacies out there that we're following. And another fallacy that I wanted to hit, I saw this thing that was out there from, I'm just trying to find where I put the clip at, something on, what do you call it, weather.com, and they had, okay, here it is. I just want to play this for you and let you know where this brought my mind. Note to Breitbart, Earth is not cooling, climate change is real, and please stop using our video to mislead Americans. So the attack is on Breitbart now, because the head of Breitbart is now the number one advisor to Donald Trump. This guy, Steve Bannon. And so not only that, you've got to have the people on the left attacking the people on the right for being ignorant. This old story that the reason that you're not a socialist or progressive is that you're not smart enough. So anyway, here's this from this Kate Parker from the Weather Channel.
So last week, Breitbart.com published an article claiming that global warming was nothing but a scare and global temperatures were actually falling. Problem is, they used a completely unrelated video about La Nina with my face in it to attempt to back their point. Now, what's worse is that the U.S. Committee on Space Science and Technology actually tweeted it out. Here's the thing. Science doesn't care about your opinion. Cherry picking and twisting the facts will not change the future, nor the fact, note fact, not opinion, that the Earth is warming. So let's break it down. Their first claim is that global land temperatures have plummeted by 1 degree Celsius since the middle of this year, the biggest and steepest fall on record. Now, that was based on one satellite estimate of global land temperatures, not a consensus. And second of all, land temperatures aren't an appropriate measure. The Earth is 70% water, and water is where we store most of our heat energy. So when you look at sea surface temperatures and you combine that with land temperatures, you actually get a record high for November of 2016. Their second claim, it can be argued that without El Nino, 2014 to 2016 would not have been record warm years. Now, you're taking a look at the Arctic sea ice melting here in this video from NASA. When you actually normalize the data, aka take out the El Nino spike in temperatures, 2015 and 2016 still come in as the warmest years on record. So that brings me to claim number three. Many think that 2017 will be cooler than previous years. Now, it is typical, yes, for temperatures to drop in a post-El Nino environment, but certainly not to record lows. If that claim was correct, we would have had global record lows all over the last century. We haven't seen that since 1911. The last time we fell below the 20th century average was in 1976, and guess what? That was directly following the 1974-1975 strong El Nino. So next time you're thinking about publishing a cherry-picked article, try consulting a scientist first. And to all my fellow scientists out there, let's make the facts louder than the opinion.
In other words, shout down the people that disagree with you. So, but what is a fact here? Okay, so according to the Weather Channel, which is part of this, if you want to call it the mainstream media, a fact is that global warming is occurring and that it's never been hotter. So each year we hear this same thing. It's never been hotter. Hottest time on record. Now, this girl has said that the land temperature was down, but the sea temperature was up. The problem with that, if you look into this, you'll find out that we don't have more weather stations or temperature stations out there. We have less. So there's vast stretches of the ocean. And this girl is telling us that the temperature is up. There's vast stretches of the ocean that have lost their temperature gauges. I think they're down like by a third or something like that. In addition to that, the people that are taking these temperatures are many of them. Well, I won't even get into that. They take the, I was going to say that many of these people are sympathetic to global warming, but that's not even the issue. The issue is they take the temperatures of these things and then they tick them up. They put a, they add some, let's say they add a half of a degree of temperature. Why? Because they have some argument for it. It's not really the true temperature where the station is. To adjust for this or that. And this has been in the news. Climate Depot and places like that have published extensively on this. But what you have is a group of people that are supposedly representing facts and science, and they're attacking the ignoramuses out there, which is you and I, people that doubt this stuff. And the reason that we doubt it is because we don't see that the ocean is rising, for example. And we see that the Antarctic ice is higher than it's ever been. And all of the premonitions of the Earth being cooked to death have failed to come through. You see that around us. But these people that follow this stuff, you can't disprove what they're claiming because... You heard her right there. Well, we're having this massive cold spell because of El Nino. So they have some anecdotal argument. So in the middle of fake news, these people are coming out with another attack. They're attacking Breitbart. And so, I mean, we've heard about this 1,000 times. But what I wanted to get into a little bit was this idea that I'll tell you when I get back, but where this stuff is ultimately coming from. Kelly O'Connelly, I'm Las Cruces, AM 1450, 716. You're listening to KOBE, 523-1450 to call in. We'll be back. Hold on a second here. I've got a little bit of news for you from New Mexico, one of which is a story from Fox News and from Albuquerque. Three kids killed, mom clinging to light after ambush by gunmen at New Mexico home. And it took place around 6:30 p.m. Woman called for help saying shots had been fired at her house. Authorities arrived, a 37-year-old mother and three children all shot, a 5-year-old boy, 6-year-old girl, and 9-year-old boy. And victims were rushed to the hospital where the children were all declared dead. And they believe the attacker was George Daniel Wexler, who'd had a brief relationship with the 36-year-old woman. And he was found at the home with a self-inflicted gunshot, and he died. So murder-suicide. And, all right, so that's one story. New Mexico ranked again as the worst-run state by 24/7 Wall Street. And, wow, worst state in the nation. Financial news and commentary website says that it takes into account financial health and fiscal responsibility as well as social and economic factors such as unemployment, poverty, and crime. Organization cited the shortfalls in New Mexico's budget this year and last, and the fact Moody's Investor Service downgraded the state's credit rating for general obligation bonds, designating its rating outlook as negative. And but the 24/7 site also said that Moody's had noted New Mexico has a strong history of balancing its budget, and the state's debt levels are manageable on the decline. Also in the mix, the state's poor high school graduation rate, and more than 20% of New Mexicans live in poverty. Now, in this city, in this county, 25% in poverty, 25% just above poverty. We've got a very poor city. We need to build up the economy here. Unemployment is 6.7%, highest in the nation. And, okay, so, and another, and in politics, .net says tax cuts, loopholes, exemptions leading to systemic implosion in New Mexico in the budget. All right. So anyway, let's get back to this thing that I was talking about. Now, I'm listening to this thing from weather.com and I'm thinking, you know, I mean, it would be so nice if it was just that simple, that there's one group of people who've been educated and are intelligent enough to go to college, I guess. And that group of people gets enlightened. And I remember I told you a few weeks ago that I was thinking about where we're at in the society, and it suddenly occurred to me that we're Gnostics, that's the standard in this. The Gnostics believe that you're saved through in education or enlightenment instead of faith. And that's the worldview of these media people, these elites. And it must be so comforting to believe that, or maybe it's terrifying that you believe that you're living in this citadel of facts and truth and science, and outside of it are raging all these idiot redneck conservatives and alt media types. And nothing, unfortunately for them, could be further from the truth, because this battle over fake news has really, in reaction to the fake news that the mainstream media put out to try to bury Trump. Now, the New York Times admitted, we're going to do whatever we can to tank this guy. He's dangerous. He's a bad person. But everybody else, and we found out from Wikipedia or WikiLeaks, that there's a whole bunch of journalists that were bought into the system. Glenn Thrush letting the Clinton campaign check and change his articles. John Harwood, the guy who was so antagonistic to Trump when he interviewed him and was a part of the debate for CNBC and insulted him. And look at what happened. Not only did it not work, but it exposed the fake news that they were putting out. So they immediately have to jump on the right, the so-called alt-right, to go after the real problem is the fake news from the right. All right, so here's a little interview between, as that is a preamble, here's Tucker Carlson and this guy named McMorris from the Washington Free Beacon. Interesting conversation about what fake news actually is.
Well, there was drama in Washington yesterday as a 28-year-old fired a rifle.
All right, so there was a guy who went to this magic pizza place because there's supposedly, according to WikiLeaks, is the center of a pedophile ring. Whether that's true or not, that's why this guy with the gun showed up. What we also found out is the guy with the gun went in there, ordered everybody out, shot some bullets into the ceiling. He's a failed actor. He's not a person on the right.
Into the floor of a crowded DC pizza shop on Connecticut Avenue. The man claimed he was self-investigating a story that the restaurant was connected with a sex child abuse ring. The story has come to be known as Pizzagate. And it's convinced many on the left that the speech they disagree with on the internet, which they're calling now fake news, ought to be actively suppressed by the authorities. Bill McMorris is a writer for the Washington Free Beacon, and he spent some time looking into fake news, into that whole phenomenon, and he joins us now with an update. Bill, it's great to see you.
Thanks for having me, Tucker.
So what exactly is fake news, and who practices it?
Fake news is whatever people living in the liberal bubble determine to be believed by the right.
Right.
And it is obviously the reason that Donald Trump won the election. And this just happens to be a nice convenient thing that happened to a nice D.C. Establishment. And of course, it's based on a complete hoax. But they have taken this from the stream of consciousness, inventive minds of Central Europeans, and transmogrified it into exactly why Donald Trump won the election, which is a very convenient definition.
Yeah, I mean, I'm totally clear. I think walking into any establishment with a rifle is totally over the top and outrageous and awful and a crime, and the guy's down in jail and good. But I have to say, it's a little weird to hear journalists arguing for the suppression of views, even if they believe them to be wrong, or even if they can prove they're wrong, to argue that people shouldn't be allowed to express what they think. That's not a position journalists ought to be taking, is it?
No, it's not. But the First Amendment has often threatened journalistic establishments interested in preserving a monopoly on access to information.
Yeah.
So we've seen it time and again from the positions of opposition newspapers during the Adams administration through to today with the proliferation of blogs. You had Chuck Schumer sitting there saying, hey, we should regulate the First Amendment with the Shield Law and basically clarify what a journalist is. And a lot of journalists were very comfortable with this idea, saying that the First Amendment isn't good enough. We have to clarify exactly right. what this person is.
And Chuck Schumer's the man to do that, of course, as a noted First Amendment advocate. I mean, it's totally insane. Now, you made a point in a piece that made me laugh out loud because it was so brilliant, that the New York Times, which is chief among those outlets decrying fake news, maybe has engaged in a little bit of it. And you've got pages of examples. I urge our viewers to read this, but you say during the campaign, Times readers had the inside scoop that the nation was, quote, witnessing Hispanic surging to the polls that would break through Hillary's blue wall and that would stop Trump from being president. And it goes on and on and on like that. You found a lot of fake news in that paper.
Absolutely. And we found examples of Times reporters writing in news stories, hey, only these people buried in the Trump bubble could believe that Trump could win Pennsylvania. We at the New York Times, because we're such real journalists, know this to be different. But Ken Stern, the former CEO of National Public Radio, actually wrote in Vanity Fair before the election that he could not spot a difference between the tone with which Breitbart addressed the Trump campaign and the tone with which the Washington Post addressed the Clinton campaign, in that everything was so steeped in negativity. And the fake news phenomenon seems like a journalist establishment is not going to try to correct the issues that led them to miss the election in this movement so bigly, to quote a famous man. instead, they're going to double down and take their marching orders, remain in the bubble. Fake news is a term that was used about 500 times before the election actually took place, from October 1 to Election Day. From Election Day afterward, it's been used more than 3,000 times. So it seems like these journalists are all coming to the same conclusion at the same time. Yeah. which is probably why they're missing what's actually happening in the United States.
Weird for a group of independent-minded people who would never join a herd mindlessly or anything. They're such lemmings.
All right, so here is Brian Stelter. Now, Brian Stelter is a guy that was totally, totally opposed to Trump and even asked questions like, how do we deal with the Aryan, the white Aryan nation or the white racists that are propping up Trump? How are we supposed to deal with them fairly? And I'm like, you know, wow, that's a fair question. So here he is. Now, he admitted that the media had made a giant mistake. For one or two days or a week, he was repentant. Now he's back on the attack. Check this guy out.
Welcome back. Let's tell some truths about lying. Because the way Donald Trump lies has people rethinking some of the basic premises of journalism, like the assumption that everything a president says is automatically news. When President-elect Trump lies so casually, so cynically, the news isn't so much the false thing he said, it's that he felt like he could just go ahead and say it, go ahead and lie to you. That's the story. Why does he bend and flex and twist and warp and distort the truth? Personally, I'm curious because I think Trump does it differently than past presidents. His lies are different and deserve scrutiny. I mean, look, for as long as people have been talking, people have been lying, right? Look at these presidential one-liners. They are infamous.
All right, so anyway, take a break here, but you hear where this is headed, which is this guy's not repentant in the least for whatever mistakes they've made, for how they propped up Clinton and her dying carcass. They have to rebooted. They totally failed in their job to be independent and to be unbiased. Now they're rebooting and they're going back to square one. They're not trying to grow from the experience. It is extraordinary. And Brian Stelter, especially, he just seems like a high school kid. As somebody went to high school and dropped out of high school and then decided to become a journalist. He is about as enriching as white bread. Speaking of which, 7:32, we'll be back. AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450. I've got some analysis here that you might find very interesting. If you just stick with me, I'll guarantee you it'll be worth it. We've got some local news for you. All right, I'm going to tie it all together for you, what's going on out there. Why do people believe things that are transparently false? Now, we're talking about fake news, so you've got the mainstream media that's been pumping out a product that is more highly processed than the old Twinkie. And it's had a spin on it for so long that we take it in, you know, it's like, you know, if you go to a favorite restaurant and there's always, I don't know, something in the food. You go to your favorite breakfast place and there's always an eggshell in the eggs. You just pick it out. It's a great restaurant. You go there. Well, in this case, it's not a great restaurant. It's a stupid place called the mainstream media that constantly poisons its product because they don't tell all the facts, and the way they tell the facts that they do are slanted. How many times have you read an article and said, talked about a politician who gets in trouble, and you have to go on the internet to find out what party they're in, and surprise, surprise, they're a Democrat? Just a small example, but all right, so there's a guy by the name of Alasdair MacIntyre. He's a writer. He's British, and he wrote a book, After Virtue. The interesting thing about the book is it talks about the fact that we're living at a time when there's so many ideas that what people do is boil this book down for you. It's a very interesting book if you ever get a chance to read it. It's kind of a slow read, you know. I actually read it between Portland, Oregon, and the UK when I was flying over there. But anyway, so I had a straight shot, 8 or 10 hours. So the premise of the book is that he first says that we're living at a time when there's a bunch of theories for how you're supposed to live your life, and none of them are really intact because we've kind of passed through all these different theories. We're not really, for example, a Christian culture anymore. We're impacted by atheism. Atheism has problems. It is a failed system, according to the USSR and China. We're in modern or postmodern, whatever, time. So people believe whatever they want. But he says that they, you know, people choose what they want based on their feelings. So you get this academics up there that are so serious, and they just worship themselves, these Ivy League people who worship their own education history. And they're in love with their intellect, and they basically are believing things for the same reason that kids in another age believed in myths. The kids in the Roman Empire were raised with, you know, Zeus and Neptune and Athena. And so you're putting these kids into the Ivy League, and they're getting trained into socialism. And it's a feel-good set of beliefs. And then, you know, this guy talks about this kind of cult of fact, and we're in this now. The cult of fact, the Enlightenment, was this intellectual movement that was supposed to bring science into the replace religion with science, and that's where we're at today. And so a lot of these people will buy into these things. I don't want to lose you here because this is a very important thing to establish. The people in the media, the elites, mainstream media, the people in Hollywood having been formed by these ideas, this leftism, socialism, the academics, the political class, they all come out of this set of beliefs. And it's not based on, believe it or not, you go to school and study this stuff and it just falls apart in your hands, you know? Socialism doesn't work. It's never worked historically, and it doesn't work intellectually, but it's a feel-good movement to help the poor and the disenfranchised to make the world a better place. And globalism is the future of socialism. It's just socialism put on an international scale, and people believe in it because it's a feel-good set of theories. So calculate, or, you know, kind of bear that in mind. So why would the Weather Channel do this? Well, they're true believers, but see what they're talking about, not as a set of scientific propositions. Clearly, they're not, because they've been disproved already in a number of different ways, and we've caught them falsifying information. See it as part of a morality play, as a fable, as a story, an after-school movie, in which capitalism is explained, and we find out why capitalism is wrong and evil, because it's evil to take advantage of the poor, because it's evil to be greedy. And then there is this effect of greed and evil, and the effect is you're killing the planet. It is the most basic idea in history, but it's so feel good that people can't give it up, even when it's proven to be wrong time and time again. That's where we're coming from. Now I'm going to come back and tell you a little bit more about this. 741, just hang with me a little bit. It's all going to come together. 523 1450, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450. Kelly O'Connell on KOBE. All right, so talking about what it is that, okay, so these people you disagree with, you don't understand where they come from, everything they say is the opposite of what you believe and what you've experienced and what you've read, and it just so happens that they run the media, they run Hollywood, they run the Ivy League system, they're at the top levels of power in political class. So how did that happen? Well, just an anecdote here, but in the USSR, when the revolution, the Russian Revolution occurred, it was the Bolsheviks who won. And the Bolsheviks were 5% of 1%. So 1/20th of 1%. So, well, 5% of 1%. Let's leave it at that. And a minuscule party. How did they get and retain power through war and terror? They put their ideas into effect through the law. So that's what the elites are trying to do now. They understand, and trust me, they really do understand this, that they're a tiny minority of the population are true elites. They know they have to get a hold of the legal system. And so they do get in, and then they pass laws, and then they act like the laws are the same as the laws that came off of Mount Sinai, even if they're totally against all reality and all reason. So one of the tools of propaganda that they use was science. Now, you get into a conversation with a person who believes in a radical global warming believer, and it's two different views of the world, not just two different views on global warming. You will say, well, you know, the person will tell you what they believe, and then you say, well, I disagree. It hasn't quite been proven. It's just a theory. It's, you know, they see it as a fact, and it's a fact that if you don't accept it, you have bad will, you lack the proper breeding and background, or you're just too stupid, you're uneducated. The person on the right says, well, I'm just not persuaded. You know, I do see that we've had some hot years, and I see pictures of the icebergs that are melting up in Alaska and polar bears that are on a little piece of ice, and it looks like all the ice is gone. And then I see another picture of all these walruses on the beach together that supposedly proves they have no ice to mate on or whatever. But on the other hand, A, B, C, and D reasons, I don't really believe in it. I'm either not persuaded, or for these reasons, I don't believe in it at all. The person who believes in global warming will say, instead of themselves, you're an idiot, you're a bozo, you're a clown, you're not elite. You don't see the world. We're fighting to save the world, and you're getting in the way. So here is, there's a worship of science, a misuse of science. Treating science as a religion is one of the core problems here. It's called scientism. Here's a little clip on that.
There was a writer who talked about scientism.
Yes.
Can you comment on the dangers?
And this is William Lane Craig. He's an intellectual. He's an apologist, what you would call, as a Christian.
Perhaps.
Yes, I would be glad to comment on this, because I believe that this is rife in our culture. Scientism is a theory of knowledge. It's not science. It's a theory of knowledge. And what it says is that science, physical science, is the only source of knowledge. So that if something cannot be scientifically proven, it's irrational to believe in it. You should only believe what can be scientifically proven. Now, this is the philosophy that I spoke of that dominated the 1930s and the 40s, and that has now collapsed among philosophers who know better. Why? Well, first of all, this is far too narrow a theory of knowledge to be adequate. There are vast ranges of truth that we know and believe and are rational in believing, but that cannot be scientifically proven. For example, logic and mathematics are presupposed by science, not proven by science. Truths of ethics, like what is good or evil, cannot be scientifically established. Truths of aesthetics, the beautiful, like the good, is also not accessible scientifically. Metaphysical truths, like the existence of the external world or the reality of the past, cannot be scientifically proven. These are metaphysical assumptions. Finally, even science itself, ironically, science is permeated by unprovable assumptions, so that if you only believe what could be scientifically proven, you would destroy science. Just one example. In the special theory of relativity, it is assumed that the one-way velocity of light in space from point A to point B is constant. But we can't prove that. All we can measure is the round trip velocity of light from A to B and back to A again. It could go out and come back. We just have to presuppose or assume that the one-way velocity is constant, but it can't be scientifically proven. So this theory of knowledge is far too narrow to be adequate. But the really crushing criticism, Andrew, was the realization that this theory is self-refuting. Just ask yourself, is the statement, you should only believe what can be scientifically proven, is that statement scientifically provable? Well, no. It's just an arbitrary definition, and it's not even a very good one. So that if you only believed what can be scientifically proven, you should never believe that you should only believe what can be scientifically proven. It's self-refuting. And that's why among philosophers, this theory of knowledge is virtually universally abandoned. And it's sad to see certain people educated in the earlier era of the 20th century who are still holding on to this, people like Lawrence Krauss, for example, who are scientistic. But you can confidently reject that when your mates tell you that if something can't be proven by science, then it's irrational to believe it.
All right, so I thought that was a pretty good clip, but here's the point. You've got a group of people that are mad for power, and they're mad for power because they know that they don't have the numbers to have a majority. And so they do 10,000 different things that are just based on a few simple tricks to persuade people or to manipulate them. And one of the things they do is talk down. You know, the people who talk down to you are probably 99% of the time far lefties, because you're not smart enough to breathe the same air. And they misuse science, and they misuse the media and Hollywood and the academic system. And if you think that they win these battles through sheer intellect, just remember, they're the ones who came up with the PC movement. And they're the ones that came up with the idea that if you disagree with global warming, you should be prosecuted. And if you are a scientist and you disagree with global warming, you should lose your tenure and be forced out of the academy. They do not allow dissent, and that's because it's a very insecure movement, and it's insecure because it's false. It's false, and therefore they have to use lying and cheating and stealing and bluster and manipulation and everything else, and it's all falling apart. This media monolith has fallen apart under the Trump campaign. It's actually pretty entertaining. 753 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450 on KOBE. We'll be right back to finish her up. Denzel Washington saying it's not the alt-right that's selling BS stories. It is the mainstream media. I'll report on that tomorrow a little more. All right, Tebow. Tebow is in the Mets system, and he's going to be in the farm system yet next year. The NFL made a huge mistake in basically driving him out. They celebrate thugs, and then when they have a good role model like Tebow, no team wanted him because of all of the media. Now that they're tanking in their ratings, wouldn't it be a good thing to have Tebow on your team? All right, here's another clip on this massive cold front coming in. And five things to know about it.
That's not the picture of old man winter. I don't know what is. Minot, North Dakota, they have been going through it this week. This was yesterday. The high was 17 degrees. They had blizzard warnings. The Arctic air has moved into the lower 48. Boy, is it going to be cold over the next few days as this air continues to seep to the south. So it's not just the Rockies and the Northern Plains. Everybody pretty much gets in on this. Now, today we're looking at single digits in Bismarck. Minneapolis well below freezing. Thursday, that air continues to move off to the east. But check out back in Dickinson. Temperatures will be negative readings showing up. That's the first time we're seeing this year. And on Friday, that cold air even starts to work its way down into the south. Not only are we talking some cold afternoon highs, but check out these morning lows in the 20s for the morning in places like Atlanta.
All right, still not sure whether it's going to make it here, but all right, so we spent the second hour kind of digging into fake news and the fake news that the mainstream media pumps out, and then the fake news supposedly coming out of the alt-right, and getting into really the motivation for socialists and far lefties is emotions. Their beliefs make them feel better. Their policies are aspirational. And they're not real. They're not realistic. And so they crash and burn. And then they try to use the media and Hollywood university system and the political class to manipulate us into staying in line or being politically correct. And they try to use the laws to oppress us. But thank God there's a new day that has dawned, friends. 7:59, Kelly O'Connell. Thanks for tuning in. AM Las Cruces on KOBE. Have a great day. We'll meet back in 22 hours. Ciao. Hold on a second. Who is this? Hello? Hello? Hold on. Hey, this is Kelly. Who's this? Hello?